Thank you. I'd like to welcome everyone to the work session of the March 21st, 2023 City Council meeting. First item is presentation by the South Metro Fire Service Area, Chief Stone. He's going to ask for money, more money, isn't he?
That's my presentation. That's a great presentation. So, thank you, Mayor. City Council, I appreciate the opportunity to come before you tonight. It's always a pleasure to come and speak about the department. And I know back in February, I dropped off our 2022 annual report to you and just to highlight the department. So really tonight, I wanted to just go through that and see if there was any questions that you had. But we'll just go through page by page. I think we have that.
Yes.
And I have the clicker. Oh, that's the. Oh, I don't know. It might be you, Wendy. I don't know.
That's a technical term for them, those little things.
Oh, well, that. Did you do that or did I do that?
I did that.
Okay. You're fooling me. You're making me feel like I. Yep, there we go. See, if you pull that little thing out and you put it back in again, those little thingies, the technical term, that's my. So we'll just go through this quite. Obviously, the very first couple pages is the message from myself. And really, just to highlight some of that was that we were able to plan out with the board and the admin committee to purchase vehicles that we weren't planning on purchasing for another couple years, but because of the production dates, we had to purchase ones that we would see not until 2024. Because of what usually takes a fire engine about 360 days a year was now pushed out for production 600 plus days, just due to COVID and things. The other thing that I would like to point out in the message was just our hiring and retention. Public safety is as Chief Blackwood, I think, agree, is just a difficult thing to find people anymore to come and apply for public safety. We usually see an upturn during in a recession where people see it as a recession-proof profession, but we're not seeing that this year, and everybody is struggling. Mayor Horrocks was in our board meeting last night, and I just discussed the difficulty that we're having because a lot of the fire departments are willing to pay our firefighters more to come over and work for them. And it just creates this dynamic between fire departments where everybody's battling for the same people. But we are reaching out. We have some different avenues that we're trying this year. Look for employment and see if we can get some more people to come in and apply because it is a great profession. And it's not the profession that I thought I was going to do when I was in college, but I'm glad I was able to get into it. And, you know, as I tell my kids, look at me now, you know, which not the fire chief is not what I was looking to be, but it is a good profession. If you'll notice, this is our board of trustees and our admin committee, and you'll see the two handsome gentlemen from North Salt Lake up there, Mayor Horrocks and Ken Latham. So the board of trustees is my boss, and I bring everything to them for their approval. The administration committee is made up of all the city managers and the county clerk, Curtis Koch. And they are primarily our budget officers. We run pretty much every budget. Well, we do. Every financial decision runs through the administration committee. And then they will go, and Ken knows this very well. He was the chairman 2 years ago. And then they propose that to the board and help us with our budget. So it's a great working. Both of those groups are very supportive to us, and we appreciate that very much. This is just shows you our organizational chart, how that works out. It's kind of small on this, I'm sure. And then the interesting thing is on the side of where our five fire stations are located and the heat map of that. So you'll see that Obviously, the red areas are obviously a high call volume compared to the, you know, the purple areas. And you can see that the main area is between our three stations, 81, 82, and 83. 82 is our station up on Eaglewood Drive, and 85 is our station down on 1100 North. Those are our five fire stations, and then just what apparatus come out of those five fire stations. You'll see the call volume that those five fire stations respond on. Those aren't individual call volumes, so it's not like those are the total call volume for our department and then each individual station. So 82 is our is an extremely busy station comparatively to the other ones, and then 85 is also a busy station. So Station 84 is what our firefighters call the retirement station, and they like to go up there, and because it's not as busy, you can see the call volume up there is a little bit less. So 83 is our brand new fire station that Chief Bassett was able to build before he left. So just our deployment and what the, it's hard to see from here, so I'll get to a page I can see that. So you'll see that we ran almost 70, well, a little bit over 7,600 calls. That is about it was almost a 1% increase. We did see, obviously, a little decline during, after COVID kind of cleaned off a little bit. So we always see an increase. Last year, we saw almost a 5% increase in call volume, and this year was a little bit less, but we always do normally see an increase in calls. You can see right down the breakup of calls of 1,700 fire-related calls. Those aren't structure fires. Those could be vehicle fires, dumpster fires, hazmat calls, things like that. And then you have the medical calls, which is roughly almost 80% of what we do, medical related. Ambulance 82 is out of the Eaglewood station. You can see that was out of the 3-year track was the busiest ambulance that we had. And then Woods Cross saw the highest increase over a 3-year average. So our finances, Jessica Hardy is our financial director and pretty much my go-to person for anything financial. I think both Mayor Horrocks and Ken can speak to how great she is. She is a great asset to the department. And just a little highlight on that, you can see that most of our budget goes to salaries and benefits. That's our biggest part of our budget. So our community outreach, which I'm pretty proud of, what we do with the dealing with five different cities, everybody has, obviously we know we have 4th of July. We have three different cities that do parades on the 4th of July. We have fireworks at every city. So not only do we have to staff our fire stations, but we have to staff those events as well. And it creates obviously a staffing issue most of the time, but we're able to do it. And our firefighters step up and handle those. Liberty Fest is a big thing for us. Obviously, it's a big event. And then next to that would be Bountiful's event on the 24th, which is nice that it's not on the same night, because I'm sure it would be a little bit more difficult for us. But both Centerville and West Bountiful do fireworks those nights as well. So we have three different fireworks on the 4th and then just on the 24th. But some of those other events that we do, our Fire Prevention Week, which is done by our prevention department, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then we have a chili cook-off that we do every year. We compete with other fire departments in the state for chili cook-off. We have been the proud recipient of the best chili for several years before. We make a really good chili. And I'll include myself in that. I have nothing to do with the cooking, but I have eaten a lot of it, so it is good that way. But every year we do a cancer fundraiser for any child in our service area that is dealing with cancer. And what that is the firefighters, we put a T-shirt together, and the firefighters are able to wear that T-shirt for a month if they purchase it. And that is their uniform for the month. So they have to purchase that, and then all that money goes towards that family with the child with cancer. So that we always have a good recipient of that, and it's a good program. So and then our Citizens Police Academy, which we deal with the police departments in the county. We have our one night. We hold that down at Station 85 in Foxborough, And it's just a great opportunity for us to, after they deal with shooting people and arresting people and do everything that Chief Black deals with, we get to show them, you know, what the fire service is like a little bit. And there's a little bit of, you know, pushing, you know, give and take here, but we show them that there's a little bit more to it than, you know, being, it was the best position to be, right? And we go back to the letter that our little friend wrote to us one time, right, Craig? You know, that's probably our favorite. I'll have to show you that one time. It's probably not applicable here in the, you know, the best thing to show you in council, but it is the funniest thing I've ever seen an eight-year-old write to the fire department. So, and then just our CERT, CPR, and public tours that we do on a daily basis. We hold CPR classes every month, and CERT classes are done through, our biggest CERT class is done through Bountiful City, but they run it through our department, which is open to anybody in any of our obviously North Salt Lake, West Bountiful, Woods Cross too, but we run that CERT class through the department as well. So, our training division, the person you see there is Matt Shoup. Matt Shoup was our training division. He retired this year and went to Caldwell, Idaho as the deputy chief in Caldwell, Idaho. So we did have a promotion for that. But just the highlight of what that entails to have our training division chief, you can see that they do, the fire department, the firefighters do over 18,000 hours in training. That's just between EMS and fire. That's not including our special service area as far as the hazmat and the technical rescue stations as well. And then that on top of that is our fire paramedic and fire certs that we have to maintain. So it's a big job. We have Josh Hardy in there now as our training division chief. And then we also have a training division captain in there as well to help with the day-to-day. So our operations division is mostly deal with our fire and any other related, not EMS. And it that over on that side, you'll see the apparatus and what that includes. So we have 7 fire engines. Three of those are reserve engines. So when one of our frontline engines goes down, we move that reserve into frontline until that is fixed. And then we also have one reserve engine out at our training academy with Salt Lake City that we'll talk about in a minute. We had 2 ladder trucks, but we had to send one ladder truck back to the manufacturer, and because of some issues with that, and we're getting a new ladder truck in December, hopefully. So then we'll be back to 2 ladder trucks again. So and you'll see our ambulances. One of our ambulances that we have is up on the Boulevard station, and that ambulance is our bariatric ambulance. So if we have a person that is exceeds 500 pounds, that ambulance responds and has a special gurney and a ramp and stuff to accommodate that. And it is busier than you would imagine. So, and then just some of the other vehicles. Our hazmat support vehicles are at the station down on Foxborough. That is our hazmat station, obviously in the industrial area of North Salt Lake. So our hazmat technicians run out of that station. Our EMS division is obviously the biggest part of the most calls. Jeff Larson is our EMS division chief. Recently, with the support of the admin committee and the board, we were able to make that a full-time daytime position. Prior to that, Jeff was a battalion chief on shift, and he was coming in on his days off to make sure that everything was done. Since we put him on, we've seen a reduction in our supply costs, and that the supplies aren't being as ordered, and we've seen a reduction in our cost to that. So it's been great. Dr. Swiler is our medical director, and we work under Dr. Swiler's license for all of our controlled substances, and then he comes in and does training for us as well on a regular basis. So, just some highlights. You can see that we ran 5,900 medical calls and 30,000 procedures. So that's intubations, any kind of medical other where we might do a crike on the person for breathing. Those are that's how many procedures were done on our reports. So just some highlights there. We did, and then we administered Narcan 102 times over the year in 2022. Doesn't include if the police or it was administered prior to our arrival. So. And then at the bottom of that, you'll see that we had paramedic advancements. So we send 2 to 3 firefighters a year to a paramedic school at Weber State. And that's a 9-month program. That's just for them to go to paramedic school. That doesn't include all the prerequisites that they have to have prior to being included into paramedic school. So it's quite an achievement to do, and we appreciate that we still have people that want to do it. Our special operations is our hazardous materials teams and our technical rescue team. So our hazardous material, it runs out of Station 85, which I said, down in Foxborough. And we have 10 technicians down there. And then we also have Station 83, which is our technical rescue. That is all of our high angle rescue, low angle rescue, and then experts at extrication when we use the jaws of life. And so you can see we have 25 of those. There's a lot more firefighters that would rather hang from a rope than get in a level A spacesuit and deal with hazardous materials. So we have a lot more people that would rather be at Station 83 than at Station 85. So. And then this is just some significant incidents that we had over the years, of 2022. Just to highlight, in North Salt Lake, we did have that on June 18th, I believe. And that was that fire we had at 55 West Center, where I believe that was a compressor from the AC unit on the top floor there started on fire, and then it dripped down. Initially, the firefighters thought it started on that second level and went up to that because of the amount of damage to the deck above, but it did start at that top level. So those are always concerning to us as far as, you know, occupancy and trying to get people out of it, but nobody was hurt in that fire. So, and then you can see Centerville was the winner of the most calls or significant calls for 2022. So. Our fire prevention division is run by Cole Fessler, who is our fire marshal. Casey Vorwaller was our fire marshal and resigned to go do not fire marshal stuff. He was done being in the fire service. We were able to take, Cole came from Layton Fire as their deputy fire marshal and came to us. Amanda Mertens is our fire inspector. She's a non-sworn inspector, she's awesome and to deal with. So. They look at anything, you know, they're the DRCs and you know, things like that. So, and then we have an investigation team. So anytime we have a fire, Cole runs the investigation teams, and those are just some of our members of the investigation team. So we had several promotions with the retirements. So Steve Moss was one of our battalion chiefs and retired after 30 years at the fire department. And then Matt Shoup retired after 23 years. And so with that, we had some promotions. You can see there that Josh Hardy's promotion, and then that always is a domino effect. So then we promote battalion chiefs and then captains. And then, so it does that. And then the years of service, and you can see that Chad Willie is one of our most senior captains, and he has 35 years with us. So I think he's close to calling it quits, but we hope he doesn't. He's got a lot of wisdom. So this is our new recruit. We train with Salt Lake City and Sandy City. So we have a combined rescue or fire academy that we do. It's 15 weeks long, and it's joined with Salt Lake City and Sandy. And I'm sure you know that Jeff Bassett, the old fire chief, is now the Sandy City fire chief. So we had our orientation. We have 8 firefighters in academy. That will be done in May. And so Chief Bassett was out there and introduced himself as the Sandy Fire Chief. Was pretty difficult for me because I've known Jeff as a South Davis firefighter and fire chief. We were captains together and stuff for 20 years. So it was a little difficult to see him in a different badge. But that person that looks like he's putting his gloves on and yelling is one of our firefighters. That's Firefighter Bueller. And so I asked him when we put that picture up if he was angry or, you know, he was leaving, but he was yelling out of command. So, but he's a great firefighter for us. I'm really glad. But that is a great opportunity for us to work together closely with Salt Lake City because we do interact with Salt Lake City quite a bit. And so having those firefighters work together and come out of that 15-week academy is such a great opportunity. So, and then just some pictures. You'll see that last picture is the fire we had in Centerville where the individual went in and started the house on fire and then assaulted the couple before they were able to arrest him. And that was that's an accelerated fire, so it burned pretty much down to the ground because of the gasoline. So, and then just some of our firefighters there at the chili cook-off, that's at the burn camp. They go up and cook breakfast for all the burn kids that deal with that. And then our retirement is Steve Moss. So, any questions that I can answer for you?
I may have asked this before, but what does the designation mean when it's a 2-alarm fire or a 3-alarm fire, 4-alarm fire?
So when we are talking, our initial fire alarm will get three engines, fire engines, and then a ladder truck. So when we go to a second fire alarm, then we're going to get three more engines and another ladder truck. And then when we go to a third alarm, it adds more apparatus and more personnel to that fire. So, and then so when we call dispatch and say, hey, this is the second alarm, dispatch knows that, okay, now I need to get four more engines and two more ladder trucks and another chief officer or somebody there. So, great question.
So, when the Bountiful Hillside caught fire and all the houses started on fire, how big a fire was that, an alarm?
At the gun range fire back in
2019? Yeah.
Well, if I remember correctly, Councilman Porter, I would want to say that we had 15 agencies there. That's not including that's not personnel. So that one, because we didn't necessarily do an alarm because of the with a wildland fire, they do it a little bit differently.
Okay.
But we did have agencies all the way up from South Weber and Ogden came down to help us with that. So it was quite large, not including the police presence that we had to help evacuate and everything. But yeah, we had a significant amount of help from that, and they came fairly fast. So I was very impressed with that.
I have a question. Yeah. First, thank you for this presentation. It's so interesting, and I apologize that I was a few minutes late. The Citizens Police Academy. How often do you host that? Did you say once per year?
So it's done twice a year.
Twice a year?
Mm-hmm.
Is it at a specific station, or does it rotate around?
No, we hold it at our Station 85 down in Foxborough.
So I was with the Youth City Council this last week, and they heard from another city council about Citizens Police Academy, and they were thrilled. And they all said they wanted to do it if they are allowed. They're under 18. I don't know if that is a risk or if you could do a hybrid version for them, but they were really, really interested in that.
I believe you can do it if you're under 18, if I remember correctly. I don't know, Craig. I know so Centerville City is who runs it now. Woods Cross used to run it, but Centerville City does run it. So, and I'm trying to remember her name at Centerville that runs it. She's the police administrator over there. So they run it. So she's in charge of signing everybody up. They've already started this year or for the spring class, but I know the fall class will be coming up. But
I can find those answers for you, Council Member.
And I'd be more than happy to as well.
Yeah. It is a 12-week every week program, and I think it's 3 hours a night.
It is.
And it moves all over the county.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's probably, I mean, it has been, I know when Woods Cross was doing it, they were in charge of, you know, getting everybody, but it has been a nationally recognized program and just how well it's done. And I think for people that have done it, they all just look at it and go, that was probably the best thing we've ever done. It's a great insight in what especially the police have to deal with on a daily basis. And I think shines a great light on them and what they have to deal with. And then we just get to come in and have fun with cutting up cars and putting out little fires and things like that. So,
I have another question. I noticed on one of the slides that there was a report for how many times you had administered Narcan. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right? I'm not familiar with that, but I'm thinking it's a naloxone type.
That's exactly what it is. Yep, Narcan is just the description for naloxone. So, and that's just for overdoses.
And then is it possible for a citizen to get a dose of naloxone for their house? Then they would get it from you or from, and they would just come and ask, and then they could store it at their house?
Yeah, we don't give it out, but I know that the police will and stuff. But you'll see, in fact, I saw a gentleman the other day drive by me, and on his window, he said, I have Narcan, so.
Okay. In my assignment with the Health and Wellness Committee, one thing that we talk about is having access to that type of a resource in the community. Yeah. So thank you for doing
and
that.
And if you've never seen it work, it is pretty amazing.
Only in movies.
Yeah. It's. I want to say that's the one time that I think Hollywood does get something right. But it is amazing to watch that. You administer that. And I've seen it, you know, at levels where we're working somebody at a full arrest and you give Narcan and then they don't want to deal with you anymore. They're like, okay, leave us alone, right? So obviously it depends on the individual, but yeah, it is an amazing drug. So,
well, thank you.
Chief, do you guys cross train with the airport
people? Not on a regular basis, Mayor. We have we'll do drills with them when they do their drills. Obviously for FEMA and for some of their grants, they have to do drills. The Salt Lake Airport Fire Department, they have two fire stations Salt Lake City does out there. We have drilled with them before because of the flight path and the where they're going to come down, and we could be responding. So we do drill with them, but not on a regular basis. Only when they hold a drill that big enough that we'll send some people out there. We train with Salt Lake City quite often, obviously with our recruit academy. But every Tuesday, they do a hot Tuesday, and we'll send firefighters in, and they'll burn. As you know, we've been discussing a training facility. We don't have a training facility for our firefighters. So they'll spend 15 weeks in that academy. And really what they do is it's that high-risk, low-frequency calls volume, right, for fighting fire, going inside a house, things like that. And then they come out, and we put them on an ambulance and say, okay, this is really what you're going to do, right? You're going to be running medical calls. And they're geared to go, well, I thought I'd be, it was like Chicago Fire, right? I'd be fighting fire every day and stuff. And that's what I did for Academy. So we try to incorporate that with Salt Lake City and go out to their hot Tuesdays. We'll send a unit out there and keep them fresh on that, because it's hard for our firefighters to go out during the day and they train daily and to put on an orange cone and go, okay, this is your fire, go put it out. And it's just not the same. And so then when they go into a fire, they're like, it's been, we don't have fires weekly. So when we do have a fire, that high risk, low frequency call is unnerving because they haven't been inside a structure, maybe fire, for months. So, but it would be, that's always a good thing with Salt Lake City. And then it just creates that relationship that we have with them, because they do, we go into Salt Lake City when they have major calls, and they come out and help us when we have major calls.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
One other thing, I live about two blocks up from the station on Eaglewood Drive, and I just want to compliment your people, because we hear them come out of the station and they turn the siren on for about 3 seconds. Right? Like, I got to get out of the driveway, and then they turn it off. So it's not disturbing the whole neighborhood unless they need it. And I think the tendency would be keep that thing on because it's kind of fun, but they are really respectful of the neighborhood.
Well, I'm glad. Obviously, we don't want them to, state law says that if we have your lights on, you have to have your sirens on. And that's just, something that we do. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's really no need to hit the wind up and run down the street, with the siren blaring. I'll give you an example. The old fire station here, when the fire station, the city hall was here. So I spent 10 years at this fire station here. That's where I spent the majority of my firefighting career before I moved over to the main station in Salt Lake or in Bountiful. And it was a 2 o'clock in the morning phone. I remember this very vividly, but it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I was running down Main Street for a fire alarm at the GE building, and I had my bunker boots on and my bunker pants on, And in the fire truck, on the officer side or the non-driver side, is two pedals, one for the air horn and one for the siren, so you can operate both with just your feet. Well, my foot was on the siren, and the driver has the same thing on his, so he can run the siren as well. And we were running down Main Street at 2 o'clock in the morning with that, and that siren gets really high pitched if you leave it going for a while, right? It's the cue siren, what we call. And I remember looking over at him going, "Really, man? I mean, it's 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. You don't need to be blazing the siren." And he's looking over at me doing the same thing. Well, it was my fault. I had the boots. I couldn't feel the siren. I was stepping on it. So I waited for the chief to call me in that night and say, "Hey, listen, we had a lot of complaints from the citizens," but luckily nobody complained. But so I appreciate that very much, that they need to, obviously during the day, run those sirens. But we're in that community, and especially in Foxborough or up in the Boulevard or even the main station, we try to tell them to try to be a little bit respectful so people are sleeping. So
I live near the Foxborough station, and they are very much respectful. They Good. Usually don't turn the sirens on until they get out to Redwood Road.
Up to Redwood Road. Yeah.
At the Foxborough station, in the corner of Redwood and 1100 North, on the southeast corner, that building that has the blue, big industrial building, mm-hmm. will be torn down soon. I don't know what method there is for ability to maybe use it for training, but that whole structure is coming down in the not-so-distant future.
So anytime we can get into a structure, it is always great. We try to run that through either training or our fire prevention. Fire prevention usually hears about it because, you know, we'll be doing developments or stuff, and they're like, "Hey, obviously there's always a liability issue, or the whoever's tearing it down doesn't want us to be in there." But if we can, you know, I'll reach out to our training and let them know, because that's great. It's always great. Right now we're in the process of trying to secure some land with Holly Frontier Sinclair, and they've kind of tentatively given us permission to about 5 acres off 11th West by their refinery that we can build a training center. So looking forward to that. So that'll be very beneficial for us. We need it.
Do you mind if I take a
moment? No, go ahead.
First, I just wanted to thank Chief Stone for his really fantastic leadership and his leadership team at the fire district. They're just amazing people, and all of your employees are amazing, really. I think the partnership is a wonderful thing for North Salt Lake, the partnership with other cities. It's working. It's really working better than I thought it was before I was the city manager. I didn't really know, but it's really a great district, and it's governed well by the mayors of the cities, and well supported, as the chief said, by staffs who meet and meet on the budget. But I thought it was if I could just take a moment. I know the mayor went through this yesterday in his board meeting, but member assessments, that is, the cities and Davis County contribute part of the revenue for the district. And I think you've probably known that in your service. Our contribution this year will be $1.75 million, so $1.755 million. And it's made up of a formula based on population. So our city has paid a little bit more because we've been growing as a percentage relative to other communities that are not growing. But it's turned out to be a good formula. That's a little less than half of all the revenue that the district receives. And then the district has taxing authority, and so they collect about $6.5 million in property tax from all the residents in the district. And then there's another $3 million, a little more than $3 million in ambulance fees. So I thought that was interesting for you to know. We don't really have the chief come to our budget retreat. We try to not use you for 6 full hours of city budgeting. And so I'm taking a minute just to talk how much it costs and what we'll be budgeting for this, for participation in the fire service. And But we don't have to do much more than just identify how much our assessment is, and you guys do all the work. So anyway, I just wanted to say thank you, Chief.
No, thank you.
Appreciate working with you and your staff.
Thank you, Ken.
Can I ask for clarification? Because I was under the understanding we were assessed based on values, like property values. Is it on population?
It's not on population. It's based on property assessments.
Sorry, I did say that wrong. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah. Yeah.
It is based on that. So.
And then how does the fact that we incorporated an area, that comes to us now and the county gets that up, but the county still, do they get assessed for like Chevron or something?
Yes, that's their area. And then obviously that little area that will be annexed in will now come to you, but that was their small area as well. So, but Chevron is their biggest portion now, which is still a small portion. Yep. They are always the smallest portion. So, and then as you know, Commissioner Stevenson sits on our board as the county representative. So,
yeah, we will have an increase because of the annexation.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Well, thank you, Chief Stone.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor and Council. I appreciate it so much, the support that we get from you guys. Please feel free to reach out if you ever have any questions that I can answer. It's a privilege and an honor to be in this position and to represent. So I know I'm not North Salt Lake City's fire chief, but I am North Salt Lake City's fire chief. So please always feel like you can reach out to me at any time. So, all right. Thank you.
Chief,
I actually have
one more question. Sorry. Okay. It's very much unrelated to city business. When I was a kid, the fire...
I thought you were going to say something about my mustache, no. But I'm glad you did.
I like it, by the way.
It's March.
Looks good.
That's all we're going to say. It's March.
When I was a kid, I remember a fire truck coming and just hosing down all the kids in the neighborhood. And at Foxborough Elementary, they do a water end-of-year event. Is that something that the fire department could be involved in? Just even like high-level rain hosing them down?
So we used to do that. And we had a liability issue with it. And so that and our attorney you're familiar with is the same attorney that's sitting next to you, and he's shaking his head. So there is a liability issue there with us. And then people always will see that and then want to go more. And it almost, as it sounds, I mean, we stopped away from putting people on the apparatus up on the hose beds during the parade, even though that there's no, you know, the rules of the road are not governed, but there's just that liability there. So, and I wish it was, because it was fun. I remember doing it and we did a lot, and then somebody slips and falls and they're like, well, the fire department was putting water on the grass, and now we, you know, and then especially in their last water years, we have gone away from that just because of the perception of your waste and water, just, you know. So if you can talk the attorney into it, then I'll see what I can do. So, so thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
All right. Thank you.
Next item is Heidi's going to dazzle us with all the money we've got. Karen, that wasn't that funny.
Thank you. This report is a council meeting late. Typically, we'll be presenting this the first council meeting of the month, and so you'll have another report for the month of February at the next council meeting. So just a heads up there. According to the memorandum, we're 59% through the fiscal year. I did point out some facts about where the city is standing as far as revenue collections and operating expenditures. So I'll review that briefly. And then with the budget amendment that was made at the end of February, I wanted to present, I have one slide that just shows a pie chart of what that now makes the breakout of overall spending citywide. But as far as with 59% of the fiscal year elapsed, the general fund has collected 53.6% of its revenues. Expenditures are at 58.2% spent. And that's typical for this time of the year. We have not seen the final distribution yet for property taxes. That revenue number will take a big bump up when we get that in the end of this month. RDA funds are flat right now. We again will get those revenues in, and we'll have the distributions out per the development agreements in March or early April. The water fund, interestingly, revenues are at 55% collected. so just slightly under budget. I know this is something we are watching closely because we did take a 10% increase at the beginning of the last fiscal year or this current fiscal year, but we weren't sure the overall impact of conservation. So that revenue increase that we've seen year over year is actually 6%. So that balance and that difference is going to be that those conservation efforts. In the 2024 budget, again, based on that Bowen Collins study that we looked at for both water and storm drain, it was recommended again for another 10% increase. And so as we're looking at budget for the upcoming fiscal year, I think we're looking at that number again, but again, tempering it a bit with unknown information on overall conservation. The storm fund revenues are at 61.1% collected, expenditures at 48.9% spent. It does represent an overall revenue increase year over year for year to date of 9%. We did, and we took an 18% increase. And just a reminder that the annexation properties will not be picking up or contributing to storm drain revenue until the beginning of 2024. So we won't see those, but that should bring in an additional $45,000 a year for just the residential properties. In the solid waste fund, revenues are at 60.5% collected. Expenses appear low at 46.2% collected. That's because we're always a month behind in billing, so that's why that looks somewhat out of line. And then the golf fund is pretty much on track, a little slightly below, with operating revenues at 56.7% collected, and then their operating expenditures at 53.7% spent. Their operating costs are up 22%, and a lot of that is related to the preparations for the event center and the cafe and the grill and getting that up and running. So if you're comparing year-over-year numbers, those were the things that really stood out to me. Okay, what's the thing that I have to pull out? And, well, it did work. So this is the current fiscal year 2023 budget as amended during the last budget amendment hearing. You can see most of the spending or expenditures are related to our water and roads funds. The roads capital is going to be purely capital projects. The water fund is going to include some operating costs as well. A smaller portion, 3%, is the storm fund. Solid waste is 3% of the total budget. Golf is 10% of the total budget. Fleet is small at 2%. That top quadrant on the right is going to be all general funds, so general government operations. So everything from general government, public safety, fire, development, streets and engineering, and parks, because that's the parks administration, that represents 28% overall of the total government operations, and that's $15.2 million that's running through the general fund approximately. Redevelopment fund is 9% of the total budget, and again, most of that money is committed for either interlocal agreements with developer agreements. Sorry, I was having a hard time. And the housing commitment and administration. And so that's kind of what the overall budget looks like in a snapshot right now. And we'll continue watching those trends and hoping that we fall in line with that percent spent and revenues collected. Were there any questions about the financial report?
I have a question that I'm embarrassed that I don't know the answer to. Staff salaries, are those all under general government, or would they be in different sections depending on where they work?
They would be. Okay. They would be. So each of these sections, especially that general government, that top quadrant, can be broken out again into personnel costs, operating expenditures, capital expenditures. And then note that $53 million is also net of any interfund transfers. So if you're trying to tie that $53 million out exactly to the financial statement, it will not exactly tie out because interfund transfers are removed as far as the expenditure side.
At your next report, it would be interesting to me to see that number of like what percentage, although it's pulling from several different funds, what percentage represents personnel costs. It was interesting when Chief Stone was identifying that the human resources cost is the largest part of the budget.
Perfect. Yeah, and I think we'll take a deeper dive into that too during the budget retreat and maybe watch the trend on that as well. So,
I think it'd be safe to say, though, that salaries are a significant part of all those, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's adjourn, and maybe we could start City Council on time. All right.